Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Hello, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back CEO of the conservative think tank, the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, Michael Stenhouse. Thank you for joining us, Mike.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
As Governor Gina Raimondo wraps up her first year in office, she says there's fresh momentum for improving Rhode Island's economy. Michael Stenhouse, is Governor Raimondo correct?
Well, we've certainly got some new programs that I don't think have played out yet, although I must say that our center philosophically disagrees with the approach.
How so?
Well, the approach appears to be special tax incentives for special groups, special companies, special industries. We don't believe on its own that that can be effective at economic growth and improving our business climate. We believe that broad-based tax and regulatory reform is the answer.
Scott, how would you evaluate Governor Raimondo on her first year in office on trying to improve the economy?
Well, I think she's trying pretty hard to do what she thinks is right. On the other hand, I think the news is mixed, to be really honest about it. We have seen some downticks in the unemployment rate, but we've also seen where Connecticut and Massachusetts have now gotten all the jobs back that they lost during the recession. Rhode Island is really not there yet. And the comeback in many cases in the jobs are positions that don't pay as much as the jobs that we lost in some industries like construction and manufacturing. So I think the news is mixed, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how we proceed here.
Maureen, let's get your view on the governor and also react to Mike Stenhouse's point that, in his view, the government should just set the broad parameters for economic growth without cutting more specialized deals.
Well, I think the reality is, first of all, I think we are off to a fresh start. I would acknowledge that there's an uptick in the national economy that probably provides opportunity here. And I think she's made some general efforts in terms of the last budget, in terms of corporate concessions and so forth. I am curious to ask you, one of the big centerpieces of her economic development plan, of course, is I-195. And that appears to be a very specialized, targeted endeavor where they're willing to give certain amounts of money. And most of the people that I talk to are very supportive of that as a way of creating a knowledge industry and economic development.
I don't disagree. I think we should for a special project like 195, that's an opportunity that comes around only so often. We should do something special with it. But again, to think that that on its own is going to boost the economy of our state, is going to improve the business climate, the poor business climate in our state, is going to help the average family, is going to help the average worker, is going to create jobs in other industries, you know, that are more common to the middle class, it's just not enough.
To stay with Mike Stenhouse here, your organization, the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, has been among the groups very critical of Governor Raimondo's truck toll proposal. Your organization has proposed what you call a public-private partnership. Instead, explain what that is and how it would work.
Well, you've got the funding of the program, and then you've got the delivery and financing of the program. Ours deals with those latter two, the financing and delivery. We believe that instead of giving that $500, $600 million to the troubled Department of Transportation, who's shown that they're very inefficient with taxpayer dollars, that we should do like other states have done and hire a private general contractor who in turn will guarantee a cost certain. There'll be no cost overruns, no change orders, no big dig style delays and costs, who will guarantee delivery of the project at a certain price and maintain those roads. The state would still own them. So we think it removes risk and improves quality.
What do you think of that idea, Maureen?
I have trouble with it only in the sense that I understand and agree to the criticisms in terms of the funding proposal. But I would say that the governor has made strides as far as reform in the Department of Transportation, and the bridges are falling down. We need to do something about them. And I also think it's very important, and I'm not sure where you stand on that, is that the truckers have to pay something. You know, one of the plans that you supported, you know, we were going to take it out of the general fund and the truckers were getting off scot-free. All other states charge some sort of tolls and fees, and certainly we should be on that. That should be on in the ledger.
We don't disagree. Truckers do pay now. We're just saying increase those existing fees rather than add new tolls.
Quickly, Scott, it looks like there is going to be legislative support for some version of Governor Raimondo's truck toll proposal. What major changes do you expect?
I expect you're going to see a hybrid. I think I wouldn't be surprised if there's an increase in the diesel tax and perhaps a cutback on the toll side. I think really what a lot of lawmakers want to see is they want more information. They want to see really what the costs are, really where these tolling gantries are going to be, which roads are going to get the focus first.
House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello signed subpoenas this week for Michael Corso and former House Finance Chairman Stephen Costantino. Costantino, now a state official in Vermont, says he's willing to voluntarily speak before the House Oversight Committee. Scott, does this show that this oversight process holds the promise of unearthing some new information on 38 Studios, or not so much?
I don't think it's going to really mean anything new. I think the best road for the future here is to rely on the state's lawsuit. We've already seen the depositions there. We've already recovered $17 million from two of the law firms. We have some deep-pocketed other folks out there. And I'm not sure this state house grandstanding really means much. I would like to see them do something serious. For instance, let's stop the backdoor bond deals where people have these kind of moral obligation bonds. If a project is worth going ahead with, then the voters should decide that, not three people at the State House in conjunction with a bunch of bankers and downtown law firms.
Mike Stenhouse, I believe your organization, the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, has been part of the coalition calling for an outside probe of 38 Studios. What do you make of this oversight process?
Well, we called for the release of the court documents. We got that. We called for subpoena power in the oversight. We got that. The governor has not yet moved to do an independent investigation, and we still call on her to do that. I agree with Scott fully, except on one point. I do believe that the Oversight Committee could produce a story that's yet to be told. Let's see what Corso and Constantino say under oath. And we know that Kurt Schilling has publicly said once he's done with his lawsuit, he's got a lot to tell. So there's a lot more to come, and I think it's going to happen in the Oversight Committee when it does happen.
And we still don't know if Michael Corso, a lawyer at the center of the deal, is going to be willing to appear before the Oversight Committee. Maureen, Stephen Costantino seemed to not have the greatest recollection of details when he did a deposition as part of the state's 38 Studios lawsuit. Why would he be any more forthcoming or have any better recollection if he comes before House Oversight?
I don't think he'll have much more to say. There may be, as you say, as the story unfolds, we may pick up a few more details. The key here is the word voluntary. And if the word voluntary means that he is not under subpoena, that creates a whole different situation because he's not under oath. That gets Nick Mattiello off the hook because he has brought him in to testify and he doesn't have to subject Constantino to refusing and demanding his rights. So this may be a way to kill two birds with one stone for Mattiello, get this out of the way before the session starts, and yet have the continual requests to have these people come and testify abate when we start our season.
We're out of time, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Great to be here.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And from the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, Michael Stenhouse.
Great to be with you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.